Good morning.
Good morning, Maddie.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show this morning. So to start off, when discussing the extension of the Tasmanian tiger and the other species, what are the risks for our current ecosystem when reintroducing these animals to their native climate?
Yeah, the first thing is like, look, it's a real testament to science and technology that how far it has come that we are talking about bringing back the thylacine today, which is absolutely a very fascinating space to be helping the animals, because the way thylacine left us or gone extinct is still there is a lot of guilt in Australians regarding that. But bringing back and the impact on the ecosystem is a very complicated question. It's been, as you said, 1930. That was the last time we've had thylacine with us. So it's almost 100 years, and there's a lot. Lots have changed in 100 years, and it's changing very, very fast when you talk about climate change. So there's a lot of unknowns in there that how would the species be able to cope up with the temperature, like, the overall climate change, but at the same time, how the species will fit in the current ecosystem or the food chain which it will exist. So I think these are the questions that are not easy to answer. I have reservations in that space that whether we should be going on the path of resurrection or shall we just focus on what we've got in our hands right now?
Sounds like it could be interesting to watch this space with the research to learn more as it keeps unfolding as the project keeps going forward. So, if this project is successful, what does this mean for the existing and future conservation techniques, such as like our koalas that are currently going extinct?
Yeah. So what basically, as I said, it's really exciting times, and science have come a long, long way, which is amazing when you talk about, preserving or conserving the present species we've got. But at the same time, Australia is on the top of the list when it comes to mammal extinctions. 30, like the, we've lost more than 30 species in the last 50 years. I'm just talking mammals at this moment, because as you're focusing on the thylacine and koalas. So on that scale, I think it's really exciting. All the techniques that will actually be developed or are developing from on a de-extinction space are very relevant and very good for genetic rescue, right? So yes, amazing. We should be working in this space, but exactly how we are applying that and how we are strategizing or prioritizing our resources, because I would like to say that how little money is invested in conservation at this moment in Australia. So based on that, when you've got a very small pot of resources, we got to be really careful as a scientific community. How do we prioritize versus what we've got in hand and what we could bring back from the past?
So, do you think projects like this switch the focus from preservation to de-extinction, and is this potentially harmful?
I mean, in my personal opinion, I think we need to focus on conservation and preservation, and we've got quite a lot in our hands. I've got this quokka in my background, so this is our WA star species, and they have been struggling. Like all the species have been struggling. We've got Gilbert's potoroo, which is one of the most amazing and most endangered, critically endangered mammals of Australia. Less than 100 left. They've actually gone down the path of extinction. And then they were rediscovered in 1992 again. So we've got at least 100 in hand. So the same technologies or the same resources which are going to bring back one single individual could actually save thousands right now. And it's the same technologies, advancement in technology, great idea, philanthropic money coming into that space. We really need that. But what we use it towards is what we need to decide, and Australia needs to decide, not me.
Seems like priorities need to be shifted a little bit, a bit from away from the far-fetched and back to our home grounds. So, what are some ethical considerations for projects such as these?
So, in terms of the ethical considerations, like what Colossal and the group that is leading the thylacine de-extinction project in University of Melbourne have said, that it is going to be something like thylacine. It is not even going to be exactly thylacine, because we still haven't got 100% DNA map for thylacine. It's complete about 95%. My team at DNA Zoo Australia done the numbat, which is the closest living cousin of thylacine, to start filling those gaps, which is very important because filling those gaps and having a complete DNA map will not just facilitate the de-extinction efforts, but also helps us understand that what has gone, or what sort of pressures, environmental pressures or signatures are present in those samples, the thylacine samples from 100 years back, because that could help us save the very close relatives. Like, for example, I talk about numbat, which is the closest cousin of thylacine living at this moment. And we've only got 1,000 of them left. They are going down the exactly same path as thylacine. So learnings could be applied from the thylacine DNA or genomics or genetics research to save the numbat, to save the Tasmanian devil, which is its next close cousin. And then we've got the quolls. We've recently had the northern quoll go extinct. So they are all cousins. They sit very close to each other in that family, and we're losing one after another. So ethical considerations, yes, it is not going to be thylacine. It is going to be something like thylacine. So which means a genetically engineered species or an individual. So there's big concerns around, putting that out in the wild. So I don't think so that's going to be happening or actually possible even to think in current regulatory systems which we live in. And I don't think so that's good for the environment either.
Sounds very interesting. So we've only got 95% of the thylacine's DNA, and we're substituting it with other things that we pick up and find. That's really incredible. So what do you think that the government or our listeners can do to help fund this research and maybe move it into areas that are more important and more pressing?
I think more important is, as I said, there's about 1 million species at the global level which are sitting at the risk of extinction, or I would say just at the verge of extinction. So all of them need saving, and it requires building quite a lot of genetic resources, but at the same time also collecting a lot of ecological data and many other different types of data sets that are required. The genetic rescue needs to advance so that we can actually help the husbandry methods that are applied for, by the conservation managers in the wildlife organizations or different zoos, which manage those populations, very, very, precious populations which we are left with. So I think what the I really there is a call to action to the government to really come into play to help build those foundational resources, start prioritize the most critically endangered ones. At least let's get started on that so that we don't do the mistake of what we've done with our beloved koala. Nobody can imagine Australia without koalas. And what have we done? It's too little, too late happened now because we did not have enough genetic information on that. So we ended up inbreeding that species quite a lot. And one disease, one virus comes and wipes the whole population. We need to maintain the genetic diversity because that is the key to survival for any species when it comes to facing different challenges that comes its way in terms of environment, climate, ecological pressures.
Sounds entirely fascinating, and it seems like we could go on forever about this subject. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Maddie. It was a pleasure to be here.